Upgrade your tool storage for the new year with help from Menards. For heavy-duty storage that protects your tools, choose Masterforce. From shelving units to cabinets and so much more, you can keep your tools safe and within reach. Get versatile and durable storage from Masterforce today. Check out all our Masterforce storage in-store or check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
It's time to get organized this new year with Menards. Update your closet system and add style today with Closet Culture. Choose from two closet finishes and four colors of shelf boards to create a functional yet stylish closet solution that matches your home decor. Check out all our Closet Culture closet kits or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com to see all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of the Fantasy Writers Tool Shed. This is Richie, hit cover from Liverpool, we're still alive and virus free. And we've got, back in the studio, back in the tool shed.
This is JM, and yeah, it's been a long time. Richie, how you been?
Yeah, like I say, still alive, I haven't got the virus yet. I understand that you're coming out of lockdown though soon over in South Korea.
I'm hoping. Seems like I might have still a week or so left at home. But the time I've had 2 weeks at home so far, and it's been pretty productive. I've gotten back into doing some writing. Prior to the epidemic, I was lamenting not having any writing time in my blog, and then all of a sudden I was stuck at home. So it took me a while to get back into the swing of things, but now I'm cranking out content. It feels nice.
Yeah, the universe was listening to you. I've been in a similar position. I've just started a new job and then everything's sort of settled down again now. So I've had time to do a few projects that I've been put on the back burner for a while. And I think we've both been in the process, haven't we, in the last few weeks of putting covers together for our new books. So
yeah,
it's been like quite a convenient subject for us to cover today since we've been going through it ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, you've got at least two books that you've got cover stuff you're working on, and I've got two, so it just seems like an appropriate topic. So why don't you give some detail about the stuff that you're working on?
Yeah, so there's virus going on at the moment. So it's easy to feel quite a bit helpless, isn't it? You've got all these nurses and doctors on the front line saving lives, and you're just sitting at home eating chocolate. I wanted to do something to sort of give a bit back. So I've had this book lined up for a while called Thoughts on Writing, which is a collection of all the different advice and tips and guidance that I've come across over the years that I've found really helpful. It's sort of structured around a fantasy writer's handbook. There's a lot of that content in that book was just general writing advice. So I wanted to put that into just a general book on writing, lose the sort of fantasy focus. And I've expanded on some chapters, I've added a few more in, and that's coming out next Friday, the 17th of April, and all the proceeds being used to help those impacted by the coronavirus. So any care homes, any food banks that need donations, any charities that need cost covering. I mean, I don't expect to make a lot of money out of this, but if I can help a few people, then it'll be worth it. So what about you? What have you had going on?
Definitely worth it. And then you've also got, hopefully coming up here soon, you've got your cover for your novel with Fiction Vortex that you've got to start working on with the in-house cover artist for the publisher.
Yeah.
So that'll be coming up here soon. So you'll have another cover you'll have to work on. As for me, I've got two that I'm working on. The first one I've been doing on my own using a web design platform called Canva, which we're going to talk about later. And this is going to be a re-release of my fairy tale novella, The Nightingale. It was originally published by an indie publisher called Fantasia Divinity. And my 2-year contract with them is up. And I'm just looking to just kind of really quickly get it updated, do some tweaking and editing, and throw it back out there. And it's just a lot easier just to do it self-published at this point.
Yeah.
And then the other one I'm working on is a novella that is related to my Valley of Magic story world, which Fiction Vortex has been publishing. But this book is actually a collection of flash stories that was published online by a website called Altered Reality Magazine. They published basically in serial format, so they released one every month, and now the whole series is complete, and I just want to package it up and put it into a book. And because it fits into my Valley of Magic story world, Fiction Vortex wants to publish it, but because it's already been published and because it's small and it just doesn't carry a lot of weight, so in order to keep, you know, the burden off of their in-house cover artist, because he's kind of in high demand right now. I am actually working on a cover myself with a couple cover artists that I know. So I've solicited a cover artist to do a cover for that book. And we're right in the middle of it this week. Going back and forth via email, with ideas and updates and things. It's an interesting process. And she's the one that I've worked with before. She did the cover for The Adventures of Eirik, which was the first book I ever did. And then A Storm in New London, which is a sci-fi short story anthology that I put out. She did both of those covers. So I've worked with her before.
Oh, nice work. Busy.
Yep.
So in your writing career, there's going to come a point where you're going to have to look to get a cover made for a book. So there's a lot of different things to consider, from prices to copyright to designs, and there's lots of things that you're gonna have to factor in when it comes to making these things. So very helpfully, JM has done a lot of research on all these different factors. So JM, over to you.
Yeah, so this time around I actually took a whole lot of notes, which is weird for me because I tended to be a pantser, even though I loathe to admit it. But I think so. Book covers is a big issue of concern for writers, and I think there's a lot of information out there, but not necessarily a lot of data. So there's a lot of information out there, a lot of websites that just jump to the conclusion that covers are important just because we interact with them. Yeah. But that's a big question that a lot of authors ask, like, how important is a book cover? What role does that play in my book sales? Do I need to have a fancy, high quality professional cover, or can I just throw some text on a solid background and be done with it?
Yeah.
What I did is I went hunting for raw data, like actual statistics, actual like scientifically done studies, because the vast majority of what out there is just anecdotal. It's just people like saying what they think, but not backing it up. So I'm going to go through a bunch of data sources that I pulled together and just kind of explain like what they did and what the results were and what it reveals. And there's basically two types of data here. Some of it is subjective. So some of these were just surveys where they asked people, hey, do you think book covers are important, or how does a book cover affect your purchase? Well, that's not the best type of data, because people might be inclined for one reason or another not to, their answer might not be honest. It might be that they don't want to come off as superficial by saying, I buy totally based off a book cover, because, you know, I'm that might come off as being superficial because you're not thinking deeper about the product or something. And things like that. And then the second type of data is based on sales data. So that's kind of the best data you can get, is that you do some cover changes and the sales data changes, like people are actually committing and making a purchase, that's really good. That's solid information. So the first source I pulled up was a survey done by a website called Book Smugglers.
Yeah.
And in the survey, they had 616 people answer questions. And I'm not going to go through all the questions, just really kind of the relevant ones. Their introduction question, the big question they asked was, how large a role do covers play in your decision to buy a book? And the results were 3% say plays a dominant role in their decision to purchase a book. 48% say a major role. 41% say a minor role. And only 5% said an insignificant role.
Interesting.
So the majority, if you take the first two answers, the majority responded that it plays an important role in their decision to buy a book, how good the book cover is. And then skipping down, passing a bunch of their questions and going to one other interesting question that they asked was, they asked, what do you think is the role of the book cover? And 26% answered that covers are primarily a marketing tool. 62% answered that covers are representative of the book content. Covers are supposed to tell something about the book as opposed to be specifically for generating sales. And 12% gave some sort of other answer that was undefined. Yeah.
That's interesting.
So that is interesting. And that's an important point that's going to come up later, that the cover being representative of the book content. And then the writers of the survey also wrote some kind of general conclusions. And one of the conclusions was that they had the impression that people aren't necessarily agreeing with the idea that genre covers should be similar to other covers in the genre. However, they had added an interesting caveat that the people that answered, they don't equate the quality of a book to books with similar covers. Personally, they don't do that. However, they believe that others do make that association, which just kind of infers that the weakness of the subjective answer, you know, format is that they can imagine other people making those judgments, but no, I don't do it.
Yeah.
So
you've got to look at the kind of people who would have completed the survey as well. Like Book Smugglers, I think is a pretty big book bloggers website.
Yeah. They actually went through that in the conclusions, and they said that most of the people that responded that they were readers, not bloggers, not writers, which was interesting. They actually highlighted that detail. So it's actually the people that we want to know the thinking of were the people that responded to the survey. But again, it's a subjective survey.
Yeah.
Anything you want to say on that one?
No, I just like say it's there's not much you can really go off on that because it's a subjective survey, so it's interesting, I suppose, that people don't really think that covers play such a significant role. It's only just about half of the respondents said that it impacts them. So I mean, I look at some of the books that I've got on my shelf here, and some of them are really bland. Some of them just like a title, essentially. Others are really creative and interesting. And I think naturally you're just going to go for the more aesthetically pleasing one. But at the same time, if you know that the content is good, you're not really bothered about the cover. The cover is something that you don't really see. As soon as you open the book, the cover's forgotten about. So, interesting.
So along those same lines, I'm going to go into the next source that I pulled up, which is also another survey. However, this was a scientifically conducted survey, which I think is just a little bit more reliable. I found this one. I don't know if you've heard of Digital Commons, But digital commons is something that we have in academia, at least in the United States, where people who write their like their master's and PhD dissertations, they all get uploaded into the system, and you have public access. So this was actually a master's thesis by Holly Rollins for a Master of Science with the Rochester Institute of Technology in 2014. And it's a very strongly scientifically designed survey. So her goal was to determine the relative value of three criteria: cover design, price, and customer ratings. So like your Amazon ratings or word of mouth, things for that. And the interesting thing about this, about her thesis, is it focused specifically on science fiction and fantasy, which is, you know, what we're kind of geared towards here.
Yeah.
So, going through the results of her research, she interviewed 96 respondents. So it is a little bit smaller of a sample size, but it was a lot more rigorously done. It wasn't just throwing out some questions. It was rigorously planned and implemented and analyzed.
Yeah.
So the results of her survey showed that 73% of the people surveyed, when looking at a book and whether or not they wanted to purchase that book, they judged the cover as most important over price and over the rating, the reviews.
Interesting.
And then price followed that by 17%, and rating was the least significant attribute at 10%. So of those three attributes, cover was overwhelmingly the most important thing that got people wanting to buy a book or intending to buy a book.
Mm.
And this was, she noted specifically that this was consistent with the Schmidt-Stolting study in Germany, which I'm going to go over later. So this is just a little bit more reliable, I think, the data here, because of the way that she did it, the rigorous methodology, and also her results came out similar to a different study that was done in Germany on actual bookstore sales. It's interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. That's I mean, again, it sort of ties into the findings of the first study by book smugglers, that the majority of people do value a front cover. That would also tell you that when you're planning a book, that you should focus more on your cover than anything else. Well, I always used to spend a lot of time writing to reviewers, asking them to review it, because I thought reviews were the most important thing. But this sort of starting to suggest that covers are more valued by buyers.
That was my big takeaway, that only 10% said that they look at the rating as their primary criteria for buying a book. That was kind of a shock to me, because intuitively you think, you know, ratings are everything. And I don't know, just working on Amazon, like everybody, Amazon reviews, give me reviews. The cover was so much more important than the rating for at least these 96 people, who were self-identified fantasy and science fiction readers. So they are our target audience.
Yeah. Do you think then that in this genre, that covers, because it is such a more imaginative genre, that covers play such a more significant role? Like when I did the Fantasy Writer's Handbook, I wanted it to be as creative and colorful and interesting as possible.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. But I also, so the way I'm thinking of it is, and I'm going to get into it a little bit later with some of the other data here, is it's important for a cover to convey your genre and your story. And I think that's very important for science fiction and fantasy in particular, but just because of how many subgenres there are.
Yeah.
So being able to identify from the look of a cover that something is young adult fantasy or urban fantasy or hard science fiction with spaceships, like, that's more important for us, I think, than for anybody else. So it would make sense that people are looking towards fantasy and science fiction readers are looking towards covers first and foremost, because they're trying to get that information. And that, and that, and that, you know, is reflected in that first survey where 62% of the people said they expect covers to be representative of the book. So those are the subjective data sets, and I'm going to move on to the more objective studies that were done. And I'm going to kind of go, there's two that were done in Germany, and I'm going to stack these in order of how I think that they are important and valuable. So the first one was a study conducted by Meisenberg in 2016.
Yeah.
And in this study, it looked at the German Amazon market, and it only applied one variable, and that is covers that have photos and covers that don't have photos.
Mm.
So the idea is a more vivid cover versus a more bland kind of textual cover.
Yeah.
And the results, based on sales, the results were that a photo cover was associated with a 3% better sales rank for generally low-selling titles and a 7% better sales rank for best-selling titles.
Hmm.
So the idea is that more vivid covers. So first of all, it just reinforces the idea that a cover is important, and a better cover or a more market appropriate cover is going to get you more sales. But it also kind of hints at that a more vivid cover is might help in generating sales. However, one of the kind of secondary authors that I was reading that was analyzing the study suggested that the survey doesn't necessarily consider if it was just the cover that was making a difference, or if that a book with a higher inherent, you know, sales potential because it's a traditionally published book or a bigger author, that that book is going to have a better cover to begin with. And that's what is it's just the sales are just coming because it's a better book to begin with. So that wasn't assessed, and that's a potential ambiguity. But I
that's an interesting point. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting data set.
I've, my experience with covers with pictures on, I've never had an actual one of my books with a picture on, but I remember not long ago being involved in a cover competition, all author cover of the month competition, and the amount of romance books on there that have scantily clad men or women on the front cover is, it comes down to genre. If you've got a romance book, you want some sort of hunk on the front.
Yeah.
That is going to draw in these amorous ladies.
It's been that way for decades. But I don't necessarily, I don't think necessarily photo means like photorealistic picture photo. I would think your fantasy writer's handbook would have qualified as a photo cover. It has a visual image as opposed to a textual, as opposed to a textual cover.
I'm with you, yeah.
So that was Meisenberg from 2016, but I think the really important study that was done on book covers that's kind of like, you know, the penultimate book cover research was the Schmidt-Sterling 2011 study, which was actually cited by Holly Rollins in her master's thesis. And this was actual surveying done at a bookstore as opposed to ebooks. And what they did is, the first thing they did is they surveyed bookstore customers to basically rate the covers. So they gave the covers a rating of 1 to 5. That portion of it, you would think that, okay, we're back in a subjective land. We're talking about surveys, but that was just priming the vector for the study, right? So they have a bunch of covers that they have appeal ratings for. They have data on how appealing these book covers are. Then they apply that to sales data. So that's where the hard numbers come in. And they found that for paperbacks, the higher appeal rating for the cover resulted in a 28% higher sales. So people,
that's a big number.
So that just kind of shows that people were drawn to covers which they found, you know, subjectively found appealing. Those are the books that they were more likely to buy, which I think is really good data. And it takes all of that, you know, anecdotal, well, obviously books, you know, book covers are important type speculation, and it actually hammers in a number, 30%. A better cover is going to get you 30% higher sales.
Solid data.
They did note that that the cover rating did not affect hardcovers, but the authors speculated that this was because hardcovers inherently receive more advertising support and are going to have better, you know, they're going to have better covers. They're going to have more advertising because you only put out a hardcover for a book that you're going to go all in on. Whereas the cover of a paperback was pretty much its primary advertising. So those kind of balanced out.
Interesting. Well, it just goes to show, this like a 30% higher sales, that's a massive jump. So it is worth, it just confirms what we've sort of, the picture that we're starting to build, that the more time and effort that you spend in your book cover, the more rewards you're gonna reap down the line. So this just helps to build that picture.
And then, okay, so the last data set that I want to go over is there's several publishers and websites that did what I'm calling a binary cover test. So basically, you have a book out on the market already that has a certain cover, and then you redo the cover and you republish the book. And then after a set period, you compare the sales data and see how those two covers basically stack up against each other. And this has become a common tactic. A lot of publishers are doing it. And sometimes it's dramatic changes to the cover, which is what we're actually going to look at. But sometimes it's little things like changing the font, changing the positioning. Actually, our publisher, Fiction Vortex, I think, is doing a little bit of this to kind of get a feel for the cover market and what is selling right now.
Yeah.
So the first, and then these tests, the websites that did these tests, they did several different books, but I'm going to focus specifically on the fantasy books just because that's what we're, you know, primarily concerned with. So the first one I looked at was done by Readzy. And the book in question was called The Fire Within. And the result was that they got 28% more clicks by changing the cover. And the way they changed it was they added the character's face to dominate the cover. And interestingly, the other thing that they did is they changed the author's name from a gender camouflaging initials to the given name Catherine. So there's a lot of female authors out there, particularly in genre fiction, who use initials because they don't want to you know, put themselves out as female authors, thinking that they might get a negative reaction, which I totally understand and I know it's warranted. However, in this case, actually identifying the author as female was one of the changes that they made that generated more clicks.
That's interesting, isn't it? Do you reckon that we're going for a bit of a change there then? I mean, like, suppose the initial thing when we look at writers like J.K. Rowling, she tried to get published as a man, and I can't remember the name that she used for a man, but and then she decided to hide her initials by calling herself J.K. Rowling, to hide the gender. But to see that a 30% increasing click rates by simply identifying the gender, that's significant, isn't it?
Well, that was one aspect of it, and you know, me talking through these doesn't really do the justice, so I'll have to post the links to these actual pages so you can see what the two covers look like. But I think one of the things is the new cover has a young girl's face taking up over 50% of the book, of 50% of the page. Yeah. And it's giving off like very, very clear young adult vibes. So you have a young adult book with a young girl character written by a female author. I think that all works together, as opposed to Harry Potter, you know, a male character written by a female author might not have the same connection.
I'm with you.
So their analysis was that the redesign was far less cryptic. It told more about the book, including who the main character was, that there was magic involved in the story, and that the book was probably young adult. And their conclusion was that covers need to communicate content of the book, whether it's character, tone, or genre, which just goes back to that first survey that we talked about.
Yeah. Fascinating.
And then the second page that I looked at was I think they're a book design website. They're called 99 Designs. So they had a book called The Bazaar. And their primary change that they made to the cover was adding the character. So the first cover doesn't have a character. It's got a skull and it's got some kind of dark imagery. And then what they did is they added the character. They changed some of the fonts around, and they generated 51% more clicks.
That's insane.
Their conclusion was that typography is very important, because one of the big changes they made was the fonts. And they said the fonts should accentuate the meaning of the book's title or build on the themes and the moods. So they used a more kind of exotic, medieval, old-looking type serif font that goes with the idea of a bazaar. You know, a bazaar is something we think of as being in these kind of traditional areas of like the Middle East and whatnot.
Yeah.
And then that character also kind of hammered in that this is fantasy, maybe a little bit dark fantasy. There's some magic to it. So they concluded, you know, the typography is important and the imagery conveying what the book is about, and that syncing with, you know, the synopsis and whatnot will drive more interest.
Nice. I mean, I think typography definitely has a big role to play in reflecting the genre. I remember when we were designing the first cover for Pariah's Lament, my novel that's coming out soon. The first one that came back, it just wasn't fantasy enough, and it didn't tell you what genre the book was about. So typography, it doesn't really, you see, it's one of the things you probably take for granted, but it's definitely worth spending a bit of time picking that right font and making sure it, like you say, it illustrates what the book's about and what the themes are about and the mood. So
I think the fonts are also a double-edged sword. I think especially when you're talking about fantasy fonts, I think you have to be very careful. You want a font that fits, you know, your genre, but you also don't want it to look amateurish. I think there's a lot of people that just throw out these like blatantly like fantasy, you know, crazy fonts. Well, it's fantasy, so I'm going to throw this crazy font on there, and it looks amateurish. It doesn't look professional. So I think there's a limit between, you know, how far you can go into adopting your genre into your fonts. I think you just have to be extra careful about what you choose.
Yeah.
And the other thing I've learned is the combination of fonts. Is that it's often good to have a mix of serif and sans serif fonts on the cover. But the title font and the author font and the subtitle font usually are generally all three different, or at least the title font and the author font are different fonts. And it's not something you think about unless you're in the business of designing covers.
There are lots of different resources available to writers to help design and come up with front covers. If you're looking for images, definitely recommend websites like Pixabay or Unsplash or Pexels, which have millions of stock images on there available for free, and free for commercial use is the main thing that you want to look at, because if you're selling a book commercially, then you need to make sure you've got the right permissions to profit off that cover image. If you don't have those permissions, you may need to buy a license for an image, so you just need to keep an eye out for that.
Generally speaking, Pixabay and Unsplash are good, but if you want the best art, you're gonna have to go with the paid licensing. So that's like Shutterstock is probably the big stock art website, and that's all paid content, but it's really good content. That's why you have to pay for it. But one thing is, you can always be on the lookout for stock art pages that are paid. Sometimes have deals like sign up deals or temporary deals where you can get a certain number of images either low cost or for free. So you can always keep an eye out for that.
Yeah. And then there's a few websites that you can go on to commission artists as well. So there's a website called Fiverr, which is spelled Fivrr. I mean, I've never used Fiverr before. I've used something called Upwork, which is another similar website. But I know, JM, you've used Fiverr before.
Dug around on Fiverr a little bit. So Fiverr is everything you could think of. Basically, Fiverr started out as a website where anything you could think you could do for $5, you put on Fiverr. So cover art, editing, it goes so far beyond the literary arts, but specifically for our needs, you can find cover artists on Fiverr, and they will, you know, give you a rate, and typically that rate is $5 for something, you know, $5.
All $5, is it? Yeah,
a lot of it is. That's kind of the theme, so a lot of it is based on that. So it might be $5 an hour. Which might come out to, you know, a 10 hour project is going to come out to $50 or something like that. But that's a lot of times that's how it's divvied up, is it's $5 for some portion of a project.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't have any budget whatsoever and you need a cover, the best website that I've come across, which is one that JM's recently told me about, is called Canva.
If you don't have any money, or if you just happen to be artistically inclined, which I am not.
Yeah, Canva does it all for you, so don't worry. So we're going to talk you through how to use Canva now. So Canva, it's spelled C-A-N-V-A, like canvas, but without the S. This is the website that JM's mentioned, and it's one that I've recently used to design a free book cover, and I have to say I'm very, very happy with the outcome, to be totally honest. So, right, let's have a look then how we use Canva. So first of all, you just need to sign up, and then once you've registered, it's all totally free. There's no hidden charges, there's no, oh yeah, we'll charge your accounts in 7 days kind of thing. It's just totally free. There is a pro version which gives you more access to more things like animations and videos. But for our purposes now of making a book cover, we just need to use the free one. So first of all, click on create a design, top right. And then it's going to give you different options. So you can make logos on here, you can make flyers, you can make infographics. And of course you can make book covers. So we're going to go on that one. And then what will happen is it'll open a sort of editor, and down the left you'll have a control bar which will have like templates. Then you can go into a different tab which has photos. There's elements there as well which you can drag and drop onto your cover. So me personally, I used a template, and for my one it was in the non-fiction section. Like, there's all different types of sections which have example covers of them genres. So there's like sci-fi, there's romance, there's just generic novels. There's even things like prayer books. So if you're feeling a bit religious, there's something that you could do there as well. So once you've got your book cover, you just simply click on the template if that's the way you wanted to do it. And then once you have your template, you're then able to change every element on there. So I've just clicked on a novel book cover, for example. It's got a shadowy image of a car on it. So if I want to brighten that up, I can go to the Photos tab. First of all, select the image, then to the Photos tab. And then I can search for, say, for example, a mini car. I'm going to get a nice bright red mini. And I'm going to drag and drop that right over the dingy looking murder novel front cover. And now all of a sudden it looks like it could be something to do with the Italian job. So if you wanted to change anything else, there's all different fonts you can use. An excellent array of fonts. Very stylish looking fonts as well. Some are free, some are only available to premium members. So again, it's not too restrictive. There's still quite a lot of options, but if you wanted to change things on there, you can't change the style of the text. You can change colors, images you can add effects to, and you can add filters to. So even if you did pick the same image as somebody else, if you have a play around with it, there's a good chance that you're going to create something totally unique. There's also an uploads option as well. So if you wanted to upload your own image, that is something that is possible as well. It's something that I did when I was making my one and it worked fine. Just make sure that if you're using an image that is not on this photos section, because this photo section is linked with Pexels and Pixabay, which are free stock image websites. So if you're using your own image, just make sure that you've got the right copyright permissions to do so. Once you're finished, you simply click download in the top right. There's a downloads option there. So if you've used a premium image for your front cover, then it may say you owe a fee if you wanted to go ahead and use this cover. So it's asking me for £1 because I used a premium image. It gives you then, if you want to use it for one use for a single design, it's £1. If you wanted to use it for different things, you can pay more. Obviously, just look for the free ones if you're looking to keep it on a budget. Download options, you can download it as a PDF, you can download it as a JPEG, or you can download it as a PNG. You can, like as I mentioned before, you can also make GIFs and you can make videos as well. Animations is a premium feature, but again, that's something that you can do if you splashed out a bit of cash on the extra features. And then once you've finished, you just download and jobs are good. You've got yourself a shiny new book cover which looks professionally done, and all it's cost you is half an hour of your time. I mean, when I did my cover, I did, for Thoughts on Writing, 3 different versions, and then because it took that little amount of time, I just knocked out 3 quick covers and then posted them on social media and said to people which they liked. Annoyingly, people said that they liked different parts of different ones, so I had to go back then and forge all of them together into one universally acceptable cover. So yeah, Canva is a terrific website. It's free, it's quick and easy to use. It's like a Photoshop, a version of Photoshop without any of the sort of complicated bits. So definitely give it a go, and I think you'll be very, very satisfied and happy with it. So that's how you use Canva. The trickiest thing I always think is actually coming up with ideas. So where a good starting point, I think, is always to have a look at the market, do a bit of market research. So you go on Amazon, go on Barnes & Noble, any of them websites, and just search for the best sellers in your chosen genre and just see what covers they've got. I mean, that's what I did when I was designing the cover for Thoughts on Writing. I just had a look at the books in the authorship category, had a look for what color schemes they were using, what kind of images they were using, typographies, what kind of information would they put sort of strap lines, subheadings on the title, and any bit of data that you can extrapolate from other people's covers is going to help you out when it comes to coming up with ideas for your own.
And that just, it's just reinforced by the data we pulled up that says one of the important things your cover should do is convey the genre. So the best way to convey the genre is to look at what other books in your genre do and do something similar.
Yeah, definitely. One thing I was playing around with in this book for this particular book cover is colors. So there's a lot of there's a psychology behind colors and color schemes. Different colors mean different things. So red, for example, sort of suggests like a warmth, strength, energy, stimulation, excitement, but it also means some negative things as well, like aggression, strain, defiance. And all these different colors have different meanings. I mean, it might not work with everybody, but
yeah, it's definitely a cultural thing. Depending on where your book is, color meaning is definitely cultural. So if I ask you what color is the sun, what would you answer?
I'd say yellow.
Yeah, a Korean would say it's red.
Ah.
That blew my mind when I came here and I was asking all my little elementary kids when I was a teacher, hey, what color is the sun? And they go red. And I'm like, is it the end of the world?
Yeah.
So yeah, color meanings and psychology of colors is a good thing. It is very cultural though. But if you're publishing within your culture, like if I'm publishing in the United States, I should have a good good feeling of what colors mean in my culture.
Yeah, so that's just something to bear in mind. And any idea you get, even if you think it's stupid, just write it down. It's like, have a good brainstorm when it comes to covers. It took me a long time before I was able to settle on the covers for my two books. And then when it comes to working with an artist as well, the more detail that you can include, the less disappointed you're going to be when the artist comes back to you with his design, because otherwise you're just leaving it up to them to fill in the gaps in your mind. And there's no way that anyone is going to be able to work out what exactly is the image in your mind. So you've got to sort of help the artist out as much as possible.
I think you're right the first time. It is your design. It is ultimately the author's design. The artist is just building that. I've worked with a couple cover artists, and like you said, the most important thing is to communicate. They need to know what it is you want, but more importantly, they need to know what the work is. So if you pay top dollar for a cover artist, you should expect them to read the book or read a portion of the book, understand what the book is, to get an idea of what the cover needs to be. But yeah, I doubt most of the people listening to this podcast are going to be burning up $500 on a book cover. So it's up to you to give a very good synopsis and a very good sense to your cover artist of what the book is, what the story is, also what the meaning is. What is the meaning that story has for you? Because that's all going to get mixed in. That can get mixed into that cover. And then the other thing I learned is you need to be involved in the process. So you make suggestions. The lower the tier the artist you're working with, the more involved you need to be. So if you're working with a very kind of low cost, cheap stock image artist who's just going to pull stuff off of free sites like Pixabay to build a cover, then you can help out by finding images yourself that resonate with you and directing the artist in a particular direction. And then the last thing you need to understand when you're working with a cover artist is you're not going to get exactly what you want. You will not get everything that your heart desires. And there's a couple of reasons for it. One is, especially if you're working with stock art, then there's just limitations of the craft. You can't craft any particular image. But the other thing is, the artist knows better than you. If you're hiring a cover artist, it's because you don't know what you're doing. And the artist is going to make some choices that you might not think are right, but you need to trust them that they know their craft like you know your craft. And at the end of the day, give the artist the benefit of the doubt that they know what they're doing.
Yeah, that's a great point. A lot of considerations when it comes to book covers. It's never straightforward, and it all comes down to you as the writer and what your expectations are and what you want to get out of it. It's a very personal thing, a book cover writer, I find. You want to look at that book with pride. You've put all that time and effort into the content, and you want to make sure it looks good. There's no golden rule, I think. It just all comes down to you. We'll no doubt come back to marketing again in the future. It's such a broad topic, and it is a minefield for many writers as well. So if we can help you out in any way we can when it comes to this side of writing, then we'll be sure to do it.
Interesting that you call it a minefield. Did you know that I used to be a combat engineer in the Army? Literally going through minefields was my job. Marketing blows me up every time, but you seem to do pretty good. You seem to understand that a lot better than I. So when we do get back to marketing, Richie will definitely be in the lead.
Yeah, hopefully. Anyway, I've just started a new job as well for a marketing firm as well. So hopefully I'll learn a few more things that I can share with you as well. It's tricky, and it's a significant time investment as well. And as I move into promoting my new novel, I'm going to be focusing a lot more on marketing. So you can expect more subjects in the episodes to come.
And then, and we talked about maybe in a future episode, we're going to talk about prose and how to write your words. And if anybody knows the meaning of words, it's me, because that's what I do. I do legal analysis, and I literally look at every single word and every single punctuation mark to manipulate meaning. No, I didn't say that, did I?
Yeah, so that's definitely something that we're considering doing in our next episode, is look at all these so-called writing rules which litter the genre, the field, and we're going to go through them and knock them down one by one, because no one likes a rule, do they?
Lawyers do. They just like the rule working in their favor.
Yeah. Try and manipulate the rules to do so.
So to close up this episode on covers, I did have one little last bit of cover news, and I'll throw out some links, but I'm having a short story published in a anthology by Transmundane Press called On Time. And they just did their cover review last week. And it's a cool looking cover, very, very timely cover. So I'm going to spam out some links to that on our social media, so you can check it out.
Nice one. And I mentioned earlier as well, I've got a book coming out on Friday the 17th of April called Thoughts on Writing, which is a general book on writing, the craft of writing, core elements of storytelling, how to build your author profile, how to market your work and get published. It's going to cover everything. All the proceeds are going towards people impacted by the coronavirus. So if you can pre-order that now, and it's in paperback and ebook. So you just head to Amazon, Thoughts on Writing, and if you're feeling generous, please give us a buy there. But I think that's about it for this episode, isn't it? It's been pretty interesting, I think. A lot of facts and data, which is quite unusual for us.
Yeah, I learned a whole lot in this process. I was surprised, kind of dug myself into a rabbit hole the more that I was looking at it. So it was good for me to look at all this.
Yeah, and we hope you've enjoyed it too. So goodbye from me.
And see you next time.
Yeah, stay safe, everyone.